Welcome to New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about the evolution of our consciousness. And I think the central issue of consciousness is the fact that we are in, I think, a very well-populated universe or multiverse. And consciousness on a human level is just trying to understand that. So that's why I'm talking tonight to someone who's actually coined the word exoconsciousness. We're going to be talking to Rebecca Hardcastle and the disclosure movement and all the ins and outs of political maneuvering, including the John Podesta WikiLeaks. Thank you, Rebecca, for being here.
Thank you, Alan. It's wonderful to talk with you again.
Yes. I mean, I know you are just as excited and intent on the whole UFO situation as anyone I know. So well, let me just ask you first. I saw your name was mentioned in the summer leaking, the WikiLeaks to John Podesta. What happened? What was the upshot? And how were you exactly mentioned in those WikiLeaks?
I was working with Dr. Edgar Mitchell on his Zero Point Energy organization called Quantrek. We were working with Zero Point Energy, consciousness, and the ET presence. So it was a very kind of a radical frontier science-based organization. And as part of my work, I lived in Washington, D.C., and as part of my work, we decided that we would try and get a meeting set up between Edgar, myself, John Podesta, and Barack Obama. And so I made some phone calls, and I got a hold of Aaron Sipp, who was John Podesta's assistant at the time when he was the White House counsel. This is back in, I think, 2014.
Yeah.
And I spoke with Aaron, and we wrote, I wrote the emails, and then Edgar okayed the emails. That's kind of how we worked together. And because after you work with someone for several years, you know what their approach is about. And actually, the first email I wrote was kind of interesting because I wrote it saying that 50 years ago, the think tanks like Rand and Battelle said that humans were not ready for contact, and that we needed that today in 2014 was when I sent the email, that, you know, this 50 years has gone by and we need to look at that again and talk about the fact that humans are ready to have contact. And so I sent the email on Edgar's behalf to set up the meeting, and Aaron Sipp got back to me right away and said that John Podesta wanted to take the meeting alone and that he would involve Obama in subsequent meetings. And so we got a date when John was going to be in Washington because he was traveling a lot at that time. And it was the week of August 11th, I believe, 2014. And so we set up a time for Edgar to come to D.C. and for me, for Edgar and I to go meet with John Podesta. And during that time was when Edgar began to decline in his health, and he had to stop traveling. And so he just notified me that he was unable to make the meeting. He was unable to come to Washington, D.C. at the time. Now, at this time, I'm in Washington, D.C. He's in Florida, Lakeland, Florida. So I really didn't have any physical, monitoring as to what was happening here. I just had to accept the fact that he could not make the meeting. And
wait,
so
but did the meeting—wait, let me just interrupt for 1 second and ask you, did the meeting— would the meeting have happened if Edgar could have made it? Would it have actually gone on, you think?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. And so what happened was a couple things, a confluence of circumstances happened. One of them was that Edgar got sick. So then I proposed, you know, let's have a Skype. I'll go to Podesta's office. We'll Skype in Edgar, and we'll have the meeting. And what happened was at that point, Podesta was ready to leave the White House and go to work for the for Hillary Clinton's campaign. And so the whole thing just kind of fell apart. And
that's when he made his famous tweet, the tweet that was heard around the world.
Yes.
And do you think he may have specifically have been talking about this meeting that you were having in that tweet?
You know, I never thought about that, but maybe he was. That's a great observation. I mean, I was just, you know, these things happen. I've lived in D.C. for about 6 years. These things happen. Meetings get set up. They fall through. But in my way of thinking, this would have been a very momentous meeting because we really were going to talk about the extraterrestrial presence. We were specifically going to talk about disclosure as well as sustainability and, of course, zero-point energy also. And
how close were you to actually talking to Podesta? Were you talking a lot to just his assistant? I mean, how many?
No, I was just talking with his assistant at that point.
Like, how many emails were exchanged with his assistant at that point? Was there a bunch of them or just one or two?
Well, at that point, I was just not. And if you look at the WikiLeaks, I blogged about it on my blog, RebeccaHardcastleWright.com. So my emails went to John Podesta, to the famous, you know, johnpodesta@gmail.com address. That's how they hit WikiLeaks. So I was communicating with Aaron Sepp, his assistant, as well as John himself. And then after the meeting was, after John then left and was moving on to the Hillary campaign, I sent him a copy of my book, Exoconsciousness, Your 21st Century Mind. I sent him another email that came out that said, hey, you know, would you like to go to lunch? We have a lot in common, a lot of things to talk about in terms of consciousness, UFOs, ETs. So all of those came out in the WikiLeaks.
But did he ever get back to you about any of, in response to any of those emails that you sent him?
The only response we got back was from Aaron Sepp on John's behalf, saying that we could, that John would be in town the week of August 11th, 2014, and we could schedule the meeting with him.
Oh, okay. So that he never got back to you about going to lunch or anything like that?
No. No, but who knows? But I want to share a great story. This is a great story. So I, you know, Edgar passes away. I move on. I go, you know, deeper into my work with exoconsciousness. And I hope we have a time to talk a little bit about the initiatives
that we have with the
Institute.
The exoconsciousness, I think, is the answer to all of this. So we will talk about it. So, yes, tell me the story.
So I'm just kind of, you know, the election's moving along. It's a really exciting time to be in D.C. Lots of news. You know, every morning you wake up, there's things to read on the news. You meet a lot of exciting people. And I get this email around, it must have been early, around October of the election. So October 2016. Just before the election in November, I get an email from someone in Florida who, it was actually passed through Kathleen Marston, who works for MUFON. Do you know Kathleen? She's Stanton Friedman's niece.
Martin? You mean Kathleen Martin?
Yeah.
Betty Hill Key? She's a direct link to Betty and Barney Hill, you know.
Absolutely.
So
I get an email from Kathleen, and she said, there's a man in Florida that had communication with Edgar, and he wants to send you a message. Would that be okay? And I said, absolutely. So I get a message from a man who lives nearby Edgar in Florida. Now, Edgar's already passed away, okay?
Actually, my mother lives right near Edgar, too. I was at Edgar's house a couple of times when I was in South Florida.
I love that. That's great. So, you know the area. So, Edgar's passed away. It's right before the election. I'm thinking, you know, well, my piece of disclosure is over. You know, nothing's going to happen. The meeting never happened. And this psychic said he was out walking his dog in Florida, and they'd had a big rainstorm that afternoon, and a huge rainbow manifested. And he said, I want to let you know that out of the rainbow came Edgar Mitchell.
Wow.
And he said, I need to get a message to Rebecca Hardcastle.
That's what Edgar said in The Rainbow, from The Rainbow,
yes,
from the other side?
Yes.
Wow.
Is that great?
That's great.
And so he can, I forget the exact wording, but it was that, you know, my work was to move on, which, you know, I was already doing, and that, you know, all was good, and just take care of myself, stay healthy. I didn't think anything about it. I thought, well, that was really nice that Edgar got in touch with me. Wow, you know, it's great.
Yeah.
So, but about
that is great.
Less than a week later, Alan, the WikiLeaks dump of my emails and Edgar, on behalf of Edgar, come out in the press.
Wow.
So I think he was sort of giving me a little psychic heads up through this person that, you know, things may be happening here, and, you know, I'm on it. I know.
Well, you're
on
it, but I do have, I mean, just getting back to the election and everything that was leading up, and it all looked for sure that Hillary Clinton was going to win, at least from everybody that I knew, and what all the polls were saying. And you know, there's Stephen Bassett, who's been working so hard along with everyone else, looking like, this is it. This is our moment. This is Podesta's coming in. And then it just, the whole thing got derailed, besides all the other awful things, that hope of so many people waiting for this moment just got, burst. That bubble got burst. It was the worst part of the election for me. How do you feel?
Because my field is exoconsciousness, and because, you know, I've been directly, you know, trying to do disclosure in Washington, D.C., I talk to a lot of people in D.C. about disclosure. And
yeah.
I had a little bit of a more realistic slant as to what our chances were, because other than John Podesta, there's just not a lot of interest in Washington, D.C. around disclosure.
Wait, but Hillary Clinton came out on at least
yes.
two or three radio shows and television shows
right.
talking.
And George Bush. And George Bush just came out.
I know. I saw that. That's very suspicious what he had to say, wasn't it?
Yeah, the big maybe. I think there is an ongoing, even though Podesta and Hillary did not, you know, and Obama did not do disclosure in an official, you know, announcement of the extraterrestrial presence is here. We're going to tell you everything we know about UFOs. Even though that didn't happen, when George Bush went on television, I mean, it's obvious that this part of, I call it soft disclosure, soft gradual disclosure is very much alive and well in Washington, D.C., among certain individuals.
Right, which brings us to the whole Tom DeLonge discussion. And for people who may or may not know, Tom DeLonge was a musician with, what is it, Inc.? What was his band? Blink 67?
Blink something, then some numbers. 182 or something, Blink.
Right, nothing I ever listened to, but of course he's popular. I think my nephews knew who he was and didn't know he was involved in UFOs. But anyway, for the last year or maybe two, he says he's been meeting with high government officials, including Podesta, lots of generals, and he's preparing along with them for this upcoming leak in about the reality of UFOs. Now, there's been lots of articles, but I don't know if I should believe him or not. I don't see any reason why I wouldn't believe him, because he is saying all the right things, you know, that there's been a cover-up, it's real, exotic technologies, non-human intelligence have been a part of, you know, ongoing interaction. So tell me what you feel about that whole thing.
Well, I've read a lot of the Tom DeLonge material, and it was kind of in a parallel, you know, universe, in a sense, parallel political government universe with what I was doing with Edgar. So I feel that, you know, there are factions within military and there are factions within intelligence that are ready to have disclosure. And I think in a sense, probably Tom was chosen as, you know, a mouthpiece or a representative to bring this certain piece of disclosure forward, and in the manner of which it's brought forward. You know, just about the first year that I lived in Washington, D.C., I got invited to a little dinner party in Bethesda. And I was seated across from, I was seated actually next to a person that was high up in intelligence. Mm-hmm. And it was a very small dinner party, only about five or six people. And then my husband was across the table. And this was prior to Snowden's releasing all of the information. And this intelligence person was bemoaning the fact that everything is getting hacked. We don't know what to do. And I just quietly looked at him and I just said, oh, that's really interesting because, you know, I thought that your agency, or I've read that your agency has quantum computers. And my understanding is that you can't hack a quantum computer. And my husband was across the dinner table, and he looks over and he goes, Rebecca? And then he looks at this Intel guy and goes, she doesn't know what she's talking about. And the Intel guy looks back at my husband and goes, yes, she does, and she's right. And I, just at that moment, I thought, you know, when am I ever going to have this chance again? I leaned over to him, and I said, I'm right about something else. And he said, what's that? And I said, I'm right about the fact that all of the disclosure information will be decided by the government when, where, and how disclosure happens by the government. He looked at me and he said, you're exactly right about that too. So wow. I knew then that whether it was Tom DeLonge or Edgar Mitchell or whoever it was, that disclosure that we've been all asking for was, quote, going to be a government-designed disclosure. And that's why I knew that my work with exoconsciousness, with ET experiencers, with the consciousness aspect was so important. Because is government-designed disclosure important? Of course it is. But so is, you know, the consciousness of people who are ET experiencers or who have witnessed UFOs and have had life-changing things happen to them. That's, they're designing their own type of disclosure, and it's not necessarily dependent on what the government has to say. So I kind of stand.
No, I agree. I think that disclosure is actually happening. I've met three or four people last week who called me, or I met with them in person, who said they're having consciousness types of contact. They're being downloaded or beings are appearing in their sleep, in their dreams, and this is on the rise. This is like
I think it is
huge.
Too.
Yes. So, but that, of course, that is outside. That's exactly what you're saying. This is outside official contact. But I think until it's sort of sanctified by the government, it'll just be happening in some kind of abstract area, unless there's a popular movement, of course. I'm not saying that's the only way, but anyway, what will you continue saying?
Well, yeah. I had a funny thing happen to me this fall. I was at a conference. It was right after the election. I was in a conference in Pennsylvania, and it was mostly a MUFON type of conference, and the attendees were all very active in MUFON, so they were very much, you know, tuned in to what the government had to say. And I asked this room full of people, I said, how many of you believe that the government has information about ET and UFOs that you don't already know? And I was shocked at the number of people that believe that the government has information that we don't already know. Because after being in this field for, you know, you and I have been in this field for a long time, Alan. I think after we've read everything we've read, talked to everyone we've talked to, really, is the government going to come out and give you, Alan, any information that you don't probably already know?
No, it's not going to give us, because we've been studying it, but there's about 200 million people that haven't been, and they might be a little shocked. So I it's not right. for us.
They might be a little shocked, but I think the whole sort of conditioning, people being acclimated to UFOs and ETs, I think we've really reached a saturation point in terms of movies and television and, you know, X-Files and, you name it. YouTube, certainly. I can't tell you how many people have been educated by YouTube. I think people
exactly.
really have a huge, I think people in America and people around the world, I think they have a vast comprehension of the extraterrestrial presence. I really do. Now, maybe there's a few details, perhaps, that they don't have or know of, but, you go on YouTube, watch very many YouTubes, or listen to, or go to conferences or whatever. The information's out there, and it's readily available.
I'm on YouTube all the time. I'm contributing to the extra-consciousness. I'm interviewing people who are channeling extraterrestrials or whatever you want to believe is happening. But, as far as like a government plan thing, it seems like there's some kind of trajectory that will coincide with the exo movement, the exo consciousness movement that's already happening. Because was it 2 weeks ago they found those Earth-like planets out? Five, and so, and then maybe they'll say, oh, there might be life on these planets, and yes, there's signs of life. It seems like it's an orchestrated sort of scenario. And what do you think? How do you think that's in the works? You think that will take place as Tom DeLonge says?
I think that is taking place. I'm going to make a little radical observation here because.
Please, there
was a WikiLeaks that came out just this week about Vault 7, which was the CIA and invasion of privacy through, cars, where they came out that the CIA had programs that they could take over your car and, that they were coming in through the Samsung smart televisions, that, they invaded iPhones and, Galaxy Note 4s or whatever. And that when I read that information, it was supposedly, what came out of the WikiLeaks was that there are about 5,000 people involved in this program of hacking individual citizens' privacy, as well as people in Germany, and Frankfurt came out as one of the primary places where intelligence was being filtered out into Europe, and it was a big kind of a vortex of intelligence in Frankfurt, Germany, I believe. So I started kind of reading down through the details of these WikiLeaks about the CIA and Vault 7 and Zero Day, and it was construed such that the WikiLeaks were coming out and saying that the CIA was going into coding that had a flaw in it. So in other words, you put together your iPhone with a coding that has a flaw in it. And the CIA was finding these flaws, and because they found the flaws, they were able to hack into the cars and hack into the televisions and the refrigerators and your thermal, any kind of smart appliance or device that you had. Now, you and I have been around a long time, and we read all of the information about the fact that it was a pretty well-known fact that Apple and Bill Gates and Microsoft, that back doors were put these back doors in decades ago so that the CIA and intelligence could literally hack them. But now if you fast forward to 2017, all of a sudden it's like, the corporations really didn't know. We just found a flaw in their coding, and that's how we got in. Well, that may or may not be true, but I'm kind of thinking that the CIA is cutting these corporations a break. Let's tell the story a different way now, so the corporations are all off the hook.
Right, I get that. I get. I mean, I of course there's also that
information being passed back and forth between the corporations and
government grants. I mean, if you watch anything, any history of the Silicon Valley, those that information on YouTube, one of it's done by a professor at Berkeley. I mean, you know right away that whether it's Facebook or Apple or Gates, I mean, all these were government programs. I mean, Siri on your iPhone stands for Stanford Research. Apple didn't invent that. The government did.
Oh, wait, and Siri stands for what?
Stanford Research Institute.
Oh, it does. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right, great. So what are you saying?
So what I'm saying here is that we're really seeing kind of a narrative being created around the United States and the world's loss of privacy. And the narrative is being created to say that, well, you know, here's the government and they're hacking into this coding, but the corporations really weren't complicit. They really weren't involved. I think the same thing is probably going to happen with disclosure of the extraterrestrial presence. I think that's what's going to happen is some sectors are going to get off the hook. And I think it's probably going to come out like a WikiLeaks kind of information. I don't know if it's going to be, you know, Tom DeLonge in February said 60 days, you know, it's a smoking gun. I'm going to make the big announcement. I don't know if that's going to happen or not. And maybe just has a new book coming out. I don't know.
My comment is that
the narrative around disclosure is going to be reframed.
Because
it's not going to be what really happened. It's going to be reframed.
Because some people, of course, we know have to be let off the hook because of this.
Absolutely.
Stephen Bassett calls the truth embargo. It's been going on for 70 plus years, and lots of people's lives have been disrupted and probably destroyed by it. Someone is to blame, and those people probably will be let off the hook, you know?
And my other thought around disclosure is that I've thought long and hard because, you know, I read all the original, you know, Battelle and Rand and Brookings Institute, all the think tank articles and studies around disclosure, you know, 50 years ago that, you know, we weren't ready and why we weren't ready. And actually, a lot of those studies said that the people that were going to be upset most were the scientists, not the religious people, as the headlines said, right. But they said the scientists were going to be most upset. And I just, you know, just as I read all of that information and how it came forth, I just knew that there was a narrative that was being constructed around all that, and that we're part of that narrative today. And that probably the disclosure narrative, as I read those older documents, the government would not have full disclosure of the extraterrestrial presence until we lived in an era when humans were very complicit to everything the government said. Do you know of one person that got rid of their Samsung television or telephone because of the Vault 7? No. Do you know anyone that quit using their cell phone or anyone that, you know, got rid of their refrigerator because of Vault 7, the information coming forward, people are pretty complicit about what the government says today. And because of that, I think the government knows, and they keep floating these little trial balloons with WikiLeaks until, you know, finally the bigger leak comes out. And I think it's all
So you think, in a way, WikiLeaks is, in a way, complicit also in the sense
that they're helping
to prepare. And so,
I mean,
WikiLeaks,
you can't read the Vault 7 without thinking, wait a minute. I remember when they were all, you know, involved in the back door and the government was involved. You know, if you have a sense of history, you can't read this stuff today and not, you know, it's like the question is, you're like a cartoon character with the questions popping up above your head in a bubble. It's like, what's going on?
Wait, so you think the CIA is leaking it to WikiLeaks and making it is that what not the Russians?
I think they're framing the narrative. I think they're framing their own narrative.
But just getting back to Tom DeLonge and this piece that you recommended, which was Robbie Graham.
Robbie Graham's piece. Excellent, excellent work.
Excellent on the Tom DeLonge delusion. And it's also, I don't know what Grant Cameron's thinking lately, but I did an interview with him before the election, and he felt like Tom DeLonge was being set up by the military to sort of take a fall, to come out and give some true information, some false information. So is that what it's looking like to you? He's being set up, Tom DeLonge, or is this honest to goodness disclosure possibility?
I think anybody that's involved in disclosure, anybody that's involved at any kind of more advanced level with information, I think we're all being handled. And we're all being given information and not given information, or given a narrative. I think that to think today that you have some kind of pure, not unadulterated knowledge is just, it's unrealistic today. I think people are handled, and we don't even know we're being handled.
Right. But I think, you know, that's where the whole idea of consciousness comes in, and we'll get to that in a minute, but I just want to talk to about Tom DeLonge, because I did hear him on Coast to Coast with George Knapp, who I think is a great interviewer, and he and Tom DeLonge did say that it seemed like he couldn't mention who, but I could tell, or he kind of made it sound like the Russians were working very closely with those in the U.S. to handle disclosure very delicately, because he says it's not as simple as, guess what, we have company. There's a lot of, not just factions, but there's, it's like what he was saying, Tom DeLonge, it's a very complicated issue, because it does have to do, I think, with consciousness. I mean, I'm saying this, the distortion of time-based reality. I mean, yes, of course, we know that, but I think that's what he's hinting at. You know, what we know to be true in general about the nature of reality will shift when disclosure really comes online. And, I mean, don't you feel that?
Well, I think we're in kind of a sticky wicket right here, right now, because if you do factor in, as you have so wisely, when you begin to factor in the consciousness piece, like you and I do, then we're really talking about, you know, paranormal, anomalous experiences. I mean, up to now, disclosure is UFO equals ET.
Right.
Now, when you let go of that equation, UFO equals ET, and say, we have, as Edgar Mitchell said, an extraterrestrial presence, then you're talking about a phenomenon that is so much more vast than UFOs. So much more vast.
Right.
So,
no, of
in
course,
a sense, ET, because of consciousness, does not equal UFO necessarily. And so we, you know, I have to look at that and say, you know, from what I know and from what you know, if we have government disclosure, the issue is that we really don't even have the science at this point to even cope with what ET presence might mean in a more, a deeper and broader sense. We just don't have the language or the science to even describe it. And so instead of, you know, going into the vastness of consciousness, we float stories like, you know, the reptilians are eating us and, you know, I don't know, I went to Mars, you know, for 17 years of my life. I mean, it's...
Oh, that, I do not buy that at all. I mean, do you...
Oh, it's just different. It's just disinformation. It's disinformation because we know that our scientists and our military and our leaders don't really understand the extraterrestrial phenomenon.
Right.
And so we latch
on
to trauma-based stories to scare people.
Right. I mean, I just reviewed Whitley Strieber's latest book where he talks about, did you read it, The Supernatural? Where he talks about...
I know the man he wrote it with. He's an Excellent, excellent religious paranormal scholar.
Yes, Jeffrey Kreipl. Jeffrey Kreipl.
Yes, Jeffrey Kreipl. Yeah. Great guy.
A great book. And they're saying a lot of what you just said is that we need to redefine what we think are as ETs. Because, you know, these things, when we say ET, we put it into a category and we know what that is. But we have no idea what that is to call something an ET. Yeah, it's just like, how could we know that? There's no precedent for even knowing what that is. Let me read you something that actually John Mack quoted from a guy named Patrick Harper. And he says in his book, Daemonic Realities, there's only one thing worse than flesh and blood aliens, and that are aliens which come from a non-material realm, non-material beings who come from some other dimension, whose appearance therefore questions the priority of the material plane on which we live. Beings who can manifest materially, but then vanish and move back into the soul or spirit or other dimensional realms that they came from, that is completely unacceptable. That is so much worse than physical aliens that it's hard to overestimate their impact, because it would negate the disenchantment of the world. This is Patrick Harper says this.
Right. I think so, what he's quoting there is a reality. That is the extraterrestrial reality. And until I've been an ET experiencer since I was a child. I mean, until you dig into what happened to you, and I mean, that's why the word exoconsciousness came to me. I have a lot to learn here. And and we are far from knowing it. But I wanted to let you know that there's a woman I've been working with, Caroline Corey, who has a film called The Gods, Gods Among Us.
Yes, I know Caroline. Talked to me about that film.
The Science of Contact. And she does a beautiful job in bringing together this whole, let's call it ephemeral, interdimensional, intradimensional beings and entities that manifest without a UFO our world. And she has Rudy Shields and Glenn Raines and these amazing scientists that are doing work, Dean Radin, are doing work around exactly what we are talking about right now.
Is that film finished? I was just wondering if that film's complete. Do you know?
I think it'll be finished in a couple weeks. And I hope you have her on your show and can help.
I do want to have her. I know her.
Find her movie.
I'm also trying to coordinate the films at Contact in the Desert, which I'm a part of.
Hers would be amazing. I don't know that we've had the level of scientific research that she's brought together. And the beauty of it is, I was working with Caroline when she was first putting the movie together, and some of the people, most of the scientists are people that we worked with in Quantrek with Edgar. So they have advanced their she's got I can't really say because I want people to watch the movie, but she's got some DNA information in there that will just blow your mind. I mean, it's really quite amazing.
I want to get in contact with her about possibly showing this film at Contact in the Desert.
She would love that.
That would be great. I have her number, so I'll call her. Are you in touch with her too?
I am, and I do. I have a contact information. But I also want to add this, Alan, that one of the things people don't talk about when they talk about Edgar Mitchell is the fact that Edgar Mitchell was an MIT-trained scientist and an engineer, and he put together Quantrek, which was a team of international scientists. And along with that team of international scientists, he had ET experiencers like me on the team.
Yes.
So there was something that Edgar knew, that extraterrestrial experiencers were able to have downloaded advanced information imparted to them. And he had a deep respect for them. Now, to my knowledge, I don't know if Edgar ever had an extraterrestrial experience. He certainly had the overview effect, you know, when he was in space.
But, right, the epiphany in space.
Just the whole, he always had a true high regard for ET experiencers. And
yes,
that was such a beautiful part of him.
He helped start that organization, FREE, which Rudy Shield and now Ray Hernand. Mm-hmm. But before we go to FREE, I wanted to just say what you were about what you were saying before about this idea about the true ET presence kind of opens up or helps us bridge a whole gap in consciousness of who we are and what we think about the nature of reality and this what is time and space and there's so much and my experiences have been partly felt like they've been out of body as well as in body. So in a sense it does challenge a sort of religious spiritual belief in some people, I think, the hardcore knowledge of what's going on here, you know?
Well, sometimes, you know, I come from a religious background. I'm an ordained United Methodist minister. I was a university chaplain for about 15 years. You know, I've always had, you know, deep spiritual roots. That's how I came into the planet Earth. And the way I look at it in terms of exoconsciousness is that, sure, this may challenge your religious doctrinal beliefs, but it in no way challenges your spiritual beliefs. If anything, it opens up the spiritual dimension of your religious life in ways that are really beautiful. I mean, to be able to, as we talk about it at the Institute for Exoconsciousness, when I first started with exoconsciousness, I defined it as the extraterrestrial origins, dimensions, and abilities of human consciousness. And I approached it more as an academic subject, you know, kind of like a research subject. And then after I was finished working with Edgar and I moved away from Quantrac and I got back into exoconsciousness, I began to see exactly what you were saying, that exoconsciousness is really dealing with the human innate ability to connect and communicate with extraterrestrials. And that because we can communicate and connect with extraterrestrials, that there's something in us that's extraterrestrial.
Yes,
and so
of
I talk course. A lot about the exoconscious human. What does that mean? And I think what we're seeing in your movement, then the people that you work with, and my movement and the people that I work with, I think we're actually looking at the same picture. I think what we're going to be offering humanity in the time to come is we're going to be offering humanity an alternative to becoming transhuman, to becoming an alternative to becoming a machine.
Yes, I think that's our destiny, is transhuman, not what Ray Kurzweil said, this point of singularity where we combine. That will never happen because machines are not, they don't have souls.
Well, I think for a segment of society, I think that there will be a segment of them, because I met a lot of people at the military, the Pentagon and all, you know, in D.C. I think there will be actually a segment of the population that is transhuman, that is has a lot of artificial intelligence implants, that is connected to a computer, that has, you know, their neural circuitry is, you know, hooked onto a computer, because those will be probably the super soldiers and kind of that maybe the super athletes. I think that sector of society will be actually transhuman. But I think, you know, we're looking at the possibility for other humans to say, you know, I really want to be an exoconscious human. I want to connect and communicate with extraterrestrials, and I want to use my innate psychic abilities. And if you stick an implant in me, all that's going to do is prevent me from using my natural innate consciousness.
Exactly. And I think, you know, not to get into conspiracies, but I do think there's, let's say, a movement to stop us from using our innate psychic abilities, just like the legalization of marijuana, all these things. Not that I think people should be arrested, but all these things, the obsession with technology is in the way of the expression of exoconsciousness. I think so. There's this kind of inner and outer battle on some level for the exoconsciousness freedom. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. I absolutely agree with that. I mean, I have grandchildren, and, you know, when I think of myself, I think, okay, you know, do I want my grandchildren to have implants that go into mm-hmm. their neural system and prevent them from, because psychic abilities are like any other kind of muscle in your body. If you don't use your psychic ability, it atrophies and it goes away. And why would you ever use your psychic ability if you have an implant in your brain that is taking over your free will and telling you what to do all the time? I mean, your consciousness will atrophy.
Or even drinking alcohol. I'm not saying people shouldn't do it, but I think it does interfere. I think marijuana interferes. And you know what's really epidemic is...
I totally agree.
It's ayahuasca. You know the ayahuasca
hallucinogenic plant? Oh, yeah, I know about that movement. I've always been one that believes that we don't really need all of these, you know, pharmaceutical or medicinal drugs or, you know, ayahuasca tea or whatever. You know, we don't need that. We have everything we need inside ourselves as humans. All we have to do is trust it and mm-hmm. start to use it.
Right. I do think some of those things can help open people up to
yes.
something outside their normal awareness. But then I think people get to rely on that. I think just, you know, once or maybe twice to open up the doors of perception. I think we're evolving to a place where we actually don't need that at all. I think maybe the 60s was that breakthrough within the doors of consciousness, and the psychedelic movement helped realize there's more to reality, which is really all these other things really do, shows us a bigger avenue of the way the consciousness interplays with the nature of reality. So,
and I think if you partake in those sort of things, I think you really need to, you know, educate yourself about, you know, the CIA's involvement
Absolutely.
And marijuana and, you know, any kind of, you know, drugs and mushrooms and whatever. I think, you know, the CIA was in there with both feet. I actually went to Boston University School of Theology, and even that school was part of Timothy Leary's Harvard program of LSD, and they did. And I think in 1960 something, the Harvard group came over to Boston University and on an auspicious day of Good Friday at 6 o'clock in the morning, they took a bunch of people down in the basement of the chapel at Boston University and they all dropped acid. I mean, that's kind of what Timothy Leary was doing. You know, he was doing a lot of research with religious people taking acid. So, and it was all a CIA program. Gordon Wasserman, you know, bringing up the mushrooms from South America and had the big spread in Life magazine about it. I mean, this has all been directed and defined by the CIA. You know, if
right.
you do drugs, you do that, CIA. Let's face it.
but I do think at that point in our conscious development, maybe that was a doorway, but I think we are vibrating at a much quicker frequency.
Oh, we're so far
past
that.
And I think we're getting closer to these extraterrestrial realms just by being on the increased frequency of the Earth itself. And so...
Yes, I totally agree. And I think that there's untapped... Do you know Harold Grandstaff Moses?
What's his name? Harold Grandstaff?
Harold Grandstaff Moses?
No, I don't know him. No.
Oh, he's a phenomenal musician and scientist around frequencies. And he does a lot with just sound vibration of the voice and how it can open up us up to other levels of consciousness. You know,
Well, I just saw Tom Kenyon, when he channels what he says are the Hathors, that puts me so out and gets me so high in a way. I feel like I'm bridging these other dimensions, just those frequencies that come.
Yeah, you are. Absolutely.
And I think we're living in that kind of exciting times where our consciousness is moving to expand into new neural nets of awareness. I think we're, because of technology in a sense, not to be addicted to it, but because it's pushing the envelope of what can be known, we're expanding our mental capacity, which is also expanding our frequency into other dimensional possibilities. That's my feeling.
Oh, I totally agree with that. You know, I've always thought that consciousness really isn't in our brain. It's a field that we access. And I think, you know, what you're saying is that we are accessing deeper and deeper dimensions into that field of consciousness. And extraterrestrials are part of that. I mean, the angelic realms are a part of that. I mean, all the things that's been have been, you know, throughout religious history, where we have these witnesses come forward and talk about angels and this manifesting of these, you know, supernatural bodies. I mean, if you're going to start throwing out witness testimony, i.e. ET experiencers, then you might as well just get rid of the Bible.
Right.
So
no, I agree that it's all part of a continuum of accessing frequencies from the angelic to the ET. We live in such a, in a way, complex universe that this third dimension is the simplest in its way, in its frequency. You know, but as we expand, we more and more people are starting to understand the value of the exoconscious reality. This is what the Toltecs say. I just interviewed a guy named Sergio Magana. He says this is the time of the sixth sun, where those inner experiences will be more real and more valuable than the objective experiences, than the material world. He calls that, this is the time of the Nagual. It's the Nagual versus the Tono. And so, but let me just ask.
I agree with that.
Yeah, this
one
is
of the things
of
we're
the
doing
time.
With the Institute for Exoconsciousness is that we'll be, I hope I can come on your show, maybe talk about it when we have our formal launch, but we're putting together a website that is linking worldwide all of the ET experiencer groups across the world.
Oh, really? Tell me about that.
It's
Tell
so
me,
exciting.
What,
it's a big undertaking. But we started as an international kind of a mastermind focus group, and we began to talk about, you know, where we were each coming from, and we were all involved in either educating or facilitating extraterrestrial experiencer groups, and we were all extraterrestrial experiencers, and you know, we're, you know, Peruvian and Hungarian and people from Hong Kong and just all over. And so we met for about a year, and we just kept talking with each other and sharing, and all of a sudden, I mean, we just kind of gained a real clarity that we want to be able to link on a website all of the extraterrestrial experiencer groups throughout the world, and not only link existing ones, but seed new ones. And,
that would be great. I want to support you in that any way I can. And
isn't it exciting? I think it's the most exciting thing, because it's disclosure via grassroots. It's disclosure via people who have extraterrestrial experiences, people who are literally exoconscious. They have an extraterrestrial dimension of their consciousness that they use and live through every day. And to have those people linked to one another for the first time is such an exciting undertaking. I mean, is it going to be a big undertaking?
Well, I will definitely promote that.
Exciting.
When is that going to be launched? And I'll give you some research I've been doing on that as well.
Oh, great. I'm thinking probably formally launched. It'll probably be a month or two before we formally launch it. We're going to kind of launch it in stages, to kind of like a beta to sort of get the wrinkles out of it.
Okay. Are you going to be at Contact in the Desert at all? Because you could talk about it there.
I'd love to. Yeah, I've never been invited to Contact in the Desert, so I don't, you know, I'd love to.
You could come as a participant, and then I'm hosting an Experiencers Cafe there.
You are? That's exciting. Yeah. What's that?
Well, it's where people, you know, there's a lot of the formal researchers that are there, like Richard Dolan, Linda Moulton Howe, all the big names, Eric Von Doniken, and it's a great show. But then there's times where people can talk with themselves about their experiences. So I'm hosting one of these little Experiences Cafe where people have a chance to come forward and share their experiences. So it would be a great time to share something like that. But
that would be good. Absolutely. I'll look into that.
What do you think of the free organization? The only issue I had with them is that, and I like their research, I think it's very important to have these large surveys of people, but they were saying, the thing I didn't agree with was they were saying that it seems like everyone was having a positive experience, and I don't think everyone's having a positive experience with their interaction, especially if you read some of the older literature. Of course, that was also seen from a very limited standpoint, Bud Hopkins' work and David Jacobs' work. That's sort of within a narrow framework of consciousness, but I don't think we can even qualify this in terms of good or bad. I don't know. What do you think of some of the results of their survey?
Well, I think they tried to be scientific in terms of, having a representative sample and looking at it statistically. I think they've done a great job with that. I think that what they've really done a good job of also is they took Edgar's quantum hologram work and they've moved that into kind of the science of consciousness where, how does the quantum hologram explain ET experience? And I think that is I think the science of extraterrestrial contact, as Caroline Corey's movie is subtitled, I think that is that we've just taken the first few steps into that arena. And I think that that Caroline's movie and I think that Free's work has given these scientists who have kind of been, I would say, sidelined or disenfranchised, have given them a voice and an audience and validity that they've never had before. And I think that their work in terms of ET experiencers and certainly in terms of near-death experiencers and that sort of thing, that it's just, it's a wonderful, it's like a renaissance that we're having all of a sudden that this
Well, I agree. I think Ray is a really sincere guy. I think we have to acknowledge the research of having surveyed thousands of thousands, probably the largest survey in history. But what do you think, though, about those older abduction type of situations that still seem to affect or have affected? I mean, I think I've been affected by that as well, that I don't know. It seemed to be outside the results of what some of the free surveys were finding,
Well, I think that you're kind of talking about a traumatic component to ET experience, that any time that you're having, for me, it was childhood. And, my childhood experiences with ET were all seamless. Now, when I got to be older, moving up into, later elementary, early junior high years, I, you know, had a lot more cognitive thinking skills. I was listening a lot more to my environment, to my peer group, you know, finding a lot more out about my, the world I was living in. That's when I kind of got traumatized because, you know, what I was experiencing seamlessly over here in a kind of supernatural world did not play in my reality as an older child, as an early adolescent. And that was very traumatic for me. And I got scared. It frightened me all of a sudden. Mm. And I think that any time that realities collide, that people are going to be traumatized. I think it is
right. Scary. And I think it is scary. I think it's traumatic. And I do think FREE is an important organization in smoothing the links between that and coming out. I think there'll be less trauma because of all the work that we've all done as experiences when this thing becomes known on a large scale. I think there'll still be a lot of people who will be traumatized by the fact that their reality is not what they thought it was.
What they thought, yeah. And I think that, you know, we'll look back at John Mack's work. I mean, that whole kind of transformational counseling that he did with people at that, you know, that early phase, he was so wise to know, you know, these people were traumatized. You know, I know some of John Mack's former clients or friends of mine, and they were traumatized. They were like me. They were afraid. They had a disconnect of reality, and it was scary for them. And I think that, you know, John so beautifully moved those people from, it's okay, it's another reality. You know, you can, you know, calm your neural system down and embrace it, and you're going to be safe there. It's okay. It's different, but it's okay. And I think that, you know, John talking about the spiritual awakening that people had. I mean, that's the one thing I get a little distressed about, because I feel like, you know, coming from religious roots, I feel like when is religion going to step up to the plate here and see that as disclosure is happening, because you and I both agree that it is happening, when is religion going to step up to the plate here and say, you know, we can help you on a spiritual level as you make this journey of ET presence disclosure? And a religion could be phenomenally helpful. And
well, you know,
I really don't see any interest much.
Well, actually, at the last disclosure, contact meeting, Danny Sheehan was on the panel, and Danny Sheehan, you know who he is, he defended John Mack at Harvard, mm-hmm. but I think he's very involved with the Roman Catholic Church, and he did say something about the Pope coming forward as part of a disclosure type of movement. So that might not be so excluded from some religious possibilities.
I think that, you know, Catholic churches, I mean, they've got Vatican archives full of information about, you know, anomalous phenomenon. I mean, that's all that work and that Joaquin Fernandez did in Portugal on the Fatima sighting, and came out and said that it was a UFO sighting. So I think that the Vatican has been sitting on a lot of information, kind of like the CIA. They've just been sitting on the vaults of information and really haven't released it. So, you know, if that's the indication that they're going to release it, that'd be great.
But, you know, I do think religion basically does want to control people, and just like the
absolutely.
Government wants to
control. Absolutely.
But
I think religion also knows that their system is breaking down in terms of control. I mean,
right, because
you know, the control system is transhumanism today, not religion.
Yeah, well, I do think transhumanism is breaking it down. I do think we're in a renaissance, like you said, of thought, of consciousness, and we are awakening to who we really are, and I think that will transcend religion and awaken us into the spirituality. But I do want to ask you about something you said before about the quantum hologram and explaining the science of ET contact. What was Edgar Mitchell's idea about the quantum hologram? How does that explain ET contact?
Well, he worked with with a man named Walter Schipp in Germany, who really kind of put together the quantum hologram idea that there's this quantum particles of consciousness, these waves of consciousness that can be actually measured. And then Edgar got together with him, and then they put together the whole quantum hologram and wrote a paper together, and then Rudy Shields is picking it up and moving it more into kind of the black hole astrophysics, that, you know, all information is part of this black hole within our universe, and, you know, that the information lies outside of the black hole, and that it moves in these quantum waves, and we pick it up. Edgar's quantum hologram was really about information, about the fact that information can be quantified as quantum on a quantum level. And because of that, then we can begin to research consciousness through these quantum particles. And then we have, you know, like Stuart Hameroff down at University of Arizona that's done the work with, he's the anesthesiologist that does the work with microtubules in the brain. And he and Rudy Tanz have done the research about the fact that maybe the quantum collapse is happening in the human brain, in these microtubules, that maybe that is where it's happening. They work with the mathematician Roger Penrose, and then Edgar would say, you know, along with Rudy Shields, that there's also the field of consciousness, which can be looked at as these quantum particles that that the human with the brain and the body that they participate in. So I think that's more Edgar is trying to find a way to communicate between the religious and spiritual sectors and metaphysical sectors and the Newtonian science sectors. And he found that probably it had to be done on a quantum level. And I think that's really moved forward since Edgar died even. And I think his work is going to be shown to have a lot of validity because, you know, we can have these ET experiences, we can have these angelic experiences, but if science isn't able to quantify it, replicate it, and document it, then, you know, there's really no way with our kind of Western mind that we can hook onto it. So that in and of itself is another level of disclosure. I think that's an exciting level of disclosure.
Well, that is really exciting, that understanding that. So there's, but understanding consciousness on a quantum level will show that consciousness is not local. And of course,
absolutely.
It's not just part of the beings on Earth, but exists as space itself, it seems. Is that
absolutely
what you said?
But until you can have a way that you can mathematically put this into equations or have some kind of fMRI scan of a person's brain or do DNA type testing. I mean, that's the science that's going to have to surround this whole arena of consciousness. And I think it's happening in near death. And I think it's an important, it's almost as if the humans, by having these experiences of near death or paranormal experiences, that they are pushing the scientists, which is so cool. It's like,
yes,
you know, we're scientists to say, you know, you've got to come up with the math and the measurement and the theory that helps this make sense. And I think they are.
Yeah, you know, it just reminds me of Whitley Strieber. You know, his wife died recently, and he says he's in contact with her all the time now.
I love that. That's so lovely.
It is. Yeah, he even says they're writing a book together and he I think is someone who really opened the door to the whole ET world for millions of people. I mean,
I loved all his books.
Yeah.
I loved all of them.
And there's other people coming forward talking about near death. Like I interviewed Anita Marjani
last year, and I asked her about that state where she, you know, she, have you read her book, Dying to Be Me?
I've not.
Oh, it's probably one of the best books on someone who actually died and went to the other side and came back. It's beautifully written. It's heartfelt and moving and very emotional. But she said that when she was in that world, that other in-between state there, I asked her about ETs, and she said she had a sense of something more. She was like, you know, it's like you're in this whole new world of consciousness when you pass over to that other side. And she said she got glimpses of things, but her mind wasn't able to recognize it all, you know. So she was going in that way. And her whole thing now is to try to have that state out in the body, you know, have that sort of crossover type of awareness. In the body, you don't have to die to have that. So it's like she is, in a way, moving towards an exoconsciousness in her terms. That's what I would think.
I think that's really beautiful, and that's one of the things that I've been encountering is that as I move deeper into my ET experience, as I move deeper into exoconsciousness, that I need to just stop and allow myself to be an ET.
What does that mean to you?
What it means to me is that because I do communicate and connect with extraterrestrials, that there's a part of me that is in resonance with them and therefore is them. It's kind of like there's a non-local part of me, like you said, that through consciousness that I connect with extraterrestrials. Now, when this happens, this also affects my DNA. This also affects my body composition. This also affects the information that I am allowing my brain to sort of expand the field of information it's willing to receive. And when that happens, I think that humans do become exoconscious humans. And I would go so far as to say that we become extraterrestrial because our consciousness is becoming a part of our body, that our bodies are going to be reflecting this advanced consciousness because we have to have the experience in our bodies or the experience breaks down. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it totally makes sense, and I know where you're going, and I think that is the forefront of human consciousness technology, if you want to call it a technology, which is using our brains as the leading edge in awakening to new understanding.
And allowing our body to integrate the information that we've brought into ourselves, that it literally infuses every cell on this the atomic, the subatomic level. It infuses every cell of our body. It's not just our DNA. It's our entire body that's being affected and is changing and integrating because of this knowledge. And humans are going to change. They're not going to change because they got an implant put in or a chip put in. They're going to change because their consciousness changed. And their consciousness then, they allow their body to change with their consciousness.
Well, I think it's happening. Our consciousness is changing. I think we're less attached to the old forms. And I think we're thinking in different ways. I think that's what it has to do with somehow. By thinking in different ways and acting in different ways, our bodies will take on different forms that we've been trapped in. We don't have to live by those old rules anymore. Does that make sense to you?
It's really beautiful. I mean, I think we're saying the same thing. And I think exoconsciousness has to integrate with the body. That's a very, very important step. And it has to, in terms of trauma, It has to integrate with the emotions and with the spirit. I mean, it's a very holistic kind of transformation that happens when we become exoconscious. It's like not just one part of us changes, all of us change.
So just to ask you, is there a moment you feel when you become exoconscious, when this is sort of shift in perception? Is this what you're talking about?
I think it's more of an intention with me,
right,
rather than just a moment of happening. I think it's actually how I live my whole life, that I'm open. And as one of my friends, Marilyn Gawecki, says, you know, I'm open, I'm here, I'm clear, I'm ready. And often throughout the day, I'll, you know, have maybe an extraterrestrial contact, or I'll have a moment when I feel myself, you know, I just need to stop. I need to allow myself to integrate, like where I am, who I am. And I'm open, I'm clear, I'm here, I'm ready. And I think that's how it happens for me. It's very intentional. I literally stop myself and allow it to unfold, and tell myself that I'm safe where I am and how I am unfolding, that it's a beautiful part of who I am that's emerging.
Right. You know what you are stimulating in me, the idea that these abductions that happen, well, starting with Barney Benny Hill in the 60s and 70s and 80s and into the 90s, that don't seem to be happening as much anymore, was a way of, I wouldn't say battling in consciousness, but a way of this breakthrough in consciousness where,
yes,
humans as a whole were being opened up to these realms which were beyond the limited earth plane. It's like the field was being pried open, and so the drama and the trauma of those interactions were really about the human field being activated to a new level and not knowing where to put those new experiences. Does that make sense?
Oh, I totally agree with that. It's kind of like someone had to be kind of the Biddy and Barney Hills. Someone had to be the Betty Andreasons. You know, somebody had to bring forth this information the first time. And, I mean, they were really the vanguard. They are the vanguard. And
right,
they allowed us to, you know, it's been decades. And we've, you know, we've continued the vanguard. I mean, you're a vanguard. I mean, we each come and do our own work here for the love of humanity, for the love of humans. I mean, it's funny, like when you talk about UFOs or ETs, I always say that unidentified flying objects always talked about the unidentified. And what we're really dealing with now is the unidentified within humans. Who are we that we're getting ready to see? That has up
That's
heretofore
good.
Been unidentified.
That's really
and so
good. You should run
so
with
So I
that
put the
one,
focus
Rebecca.
Back into humans. You know,
yeah,
we don't need to focus on ETs all the time. I'm really focusing probably most of the time on who I am as a human. Who I am as a human as I connect and communicate with extraterrestrials. What
right.
What about me that's been unidentified that I'm now identifying and at peace with? And allowing
well,
to
should,
grow within me.
You should write a chapter on that, or at least a blog on that. That would be really. No, you should. I think that's a really important perspective.
Yeah.
Because
so it's a different. It's kind of flipping things. I'm flipping things from like I was never really. My experience was never really about looking at UFOs up in the sky. I just was never there. I'm part of the Phoenix Lights community and all of that. But I mean, I'm just. I always knew it was not only about consciousness and extraterrestrials, but the really important piece was me as a human. I want to be,
right.
I love humanity. I love humans. I want them to be a sustainable species. I want them to, you know, grow and advance and open to new realities. And that's really
yeah.
what exoconsciousness is about. It's about humans.
It is. And you know, the thing that I think we're learning is the transcendence. I think with all the spiritual work that's happening, the moving on from the human drama, from the small emotions, you know, from the petty emotions, does this person like me, and what should, the things that are really the anger and the fear and the sadness and the resentment, those things that exist for most people or have been the only types of emotion. And what we're moving into now are the transcendent feelings that can't be qualified in those simple, basic terms. That's the unidentified part, I feel.
Well, I also think that one of the things we've run into in our international group of the Exoconsciousness Institute, that we've run into really dealing with the fact that some ETs, many ETs, are not at all like us. Some are mm-hmm. like us, and some are not like us. And I think
right.
that's kind of what we're dealing with kind of on an earth plane also, you know, the whole thing of, you know, the whole sovereignty of nation states. It's like, you know, how do we learn to say, you know, it's okay if you have your nation state and, you know, you can have your nation state and be, you know, open to other countries. You know, how do you deal with people who are like you and others who are not like you? And I think that in terms of extraterrestrials, we're dealing with the same thing with the Institute for Exoconsciousness. I mean, some ETs are not like us.
Right.
And we have to
no,
respect
the
them.
The thing, though, about extraterrestrials not being like us as opposed to humans, the ones that aren't like us, we are, I get the sense we're almost incapable of sort of understanding their mind. It's sort of like, I think Arrival touched on something like that in a way, or they started to. Did you see Arrival?
I saw Arrival, and I had to write a blog about it. I hope you get a chance to look at it. I wrote the blog about Arrival because I had to say how amazing that it was set in Montana, where some of the best ET researchers and UFO researchers are located.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I thought that was a beautiful kind of thing. And, you know, they were really trying to portray that, you know, these species were not like us. And yet it was okay. So, and I think part of that's just, you know, human expectation. If you expect every ET to be like you, you know, then that's not realistic. Every ET is not going to come down like, you know, looks like the Mother Mary angel. It's not going to happen.
But I think that's why your exoconsciousness work is so important, because we're learning that who we are as human beings is not limited to what we thought were basic human traits, that actually we're capable of much more. And as we expand into that, we get closer to those other worlds, those other realms and beings. And I think this is the bridge.
Yeah, and I think also, you know, just saying that, you know, just by virtue of the fact that I can talk to an ET species that is different than me, you know, very, very different than me, that just by virtue of the fact that I can connect and communicate with them, that there is something within a non-local field that unites us, and yet we can stay different.
Right, right. I think there's of understanding vibration and in a way energy is opening this this field of exchange, because beings,
I think that's a good
vibrate.
Way to put it.
Yeah, and I think we're understanding that about humans. There's certain humans that vibrate at different frequencies. So yeah, we're moving into a greater spectrum. That's why I think when open contact or whatever it is that will happen with the extraterrestrial presence, we'll have to be different in understanding who we are in a way to embrace those other realities, those other beings on a spectrum of being, you know?
Well, yeah, and I think that's, to me, when I look at it, I think this is a way to say it's okay to be human. It's okay to be human and to stay human. We don't have to become reptilian or grays or, you know, or tall whites. We can stay human. Right. And it's the same thing when we are with these ET groups that are not like us. We don't have to make everybody homogenized. It's like we don't need this new world order where everybody looks the same and acts the same. We don't have to have that. We can, in fact, be very different, have a sovereign consciousness, have maybe a sovereign planet or whatever, and yet still be able to get along. That's a hard lesson.
Well, the getting along is where we're stuck as a human race, you know, that's the problem here.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that, you know, maybe part of this exoconscious experience that people are having is a way, you know, that we're really trying to, as an institute, we're trying to talk about how some of these beings are very different and that's okay. We're different and that's okay. Humans are different and that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think understanding the differences, realize, and the capacity, I think this is important, the fact that we have the capacity to understand exoconsciousness and the differences expands our humanness. That's key.
Yes.
And so I think what you're doing is very, very exciting.
Thank you.
And so will you come back on when you have your institute up and ready?
Absolutely.
And going?
I'd love to.
And are you coming to New York at all?
It's not really in my schedule right now, but when I do, I'll let you know.
and maybe come to Contact in the Desert. I have to tell everyone listening.
Yeah, there
Contact.
You go.
And you know what's great about Contact in the Desert? There's a 3,000 to 4,000 people who are very open to this whole idea. There's hardly, I mean, I don't think any skeptics even come because why would they? And the top researchers and people are in an open field of exchange. And now suddenly they're free to be out about this, about their experiences. So I just think it's a very exciting vibration to be in.
Oh, I'd love to come and be in your experience or cafe. I'd love to do that. I think it would be really an enlightening thing for me.
Yeah, that and just the people you meet might be really, really great. I mean, for people listening, they can get tickets at contactinthedesert.com. I think this is the top UFO conference in the country. Jacques Vallée will be there this year.
I know. I'm rereading his book, Passport
Which
to Mangionia.
Oh,
such a great book.
Because Dimensions, I've been rereading too, and it's sort of.
Oh, have
he
you?
Was a, I mean, he was sort of the first to say, well, you know, maybe it's really not about ETs. maybe it's about something else. And I think
he got it. He got it.
That's the trend. I mean, there obviously are ETs, but the fact that they're in different bodies is not as important as the fact that we're part of a consciousness field that's bigger than humanity.
I didn't realize it, but I was reading Passport recently, and it's fascinating that there's a man that is in the revised preface of the new edition. There's a man who I haven't been on the website yet, but he's actually picked up Jacques Vallée's work and formed a database of these anomalous beings that it reports from people about, because, you know, Passport was all about the historical record of people having contact with anomalous beings, you know, little beings, elves, kind of the folklore world. And I guess there's a man who has a database that he's kept up on Jacques' work of collecting people's experiences with the fairies, the elves, the ETs. It's fascinating.
Oh, I'd like to see that.
I'll send it to you I need to pull it up and take a look at it. But yeah, I'll send it to you.
Yeah, let me know, because I'm doing a lot of writing about the interface of different forms, anomalous experiences, and its effect on consciousness, and how do we integrate it all into a bigger worldview, which is, you know, what John Mack really hinted at. We need a new worldview. We need to incorporate these things that
that are not anomalous, really. They're just anomalous to our worldview, right?
I was told recently that the man that did the Blumenthal, the man that did the Vanity Fair article on John a couple years ago, remember that? He did the Vanity Fair article on John Mack.
I think I did see that.
End, supposedly, there was someone that said that, I don't know if it was Roberta Consare or whoever it was, said that John came back and spoke with her and said that it's not what we think it is.
You know, I've had a few dreams about John, I have to say. And,
well, I guess that Blumenthal is writing a book on John, and it's supposed to be published within the next few months.
Is it a biography?
Yeah. He's in New York. Blumenthal's in New York.
Oh,
you should have him on your show.
Oh, I'd love to. Do you know who's publishing that book or who's...
I don't. I think if you just would Google probably John Mack Vanity Fair and get his name, that would probably lead you to him. And you could have a great interview with him. Please put me on your mailing list so I know that you're interviewing him, because I want to hear. It's exciting.
I will. Look, thank you for that, because I thought John Mack was the pivotal... person in the acceptance, at least for some people, of this phenomena. You know, he was a Harvard professor of psychiatry. He was trained. He bridged a gap, and I think his book Abductions is really still a very important.
It's really, I was also very, very influenced by John and, you know, read all his books. And I was actually trained by a woman, Ruth Hover, who was part of John's peer group at Harvard, that small group with Leo Sprinkle, John, and Ruth Hover, a couple other people, Roberta Consare. They were all kind of the frontier, the vanguard of ET in terms of therapy and psychiatry. But when I went back and I started digging into John's background, I found out that he actually was educated at the Boston Psychoanalytic Institute in Boston, Massachusetts, which was actually founded by Henry Murray, who was at the forefront of MK Ultra. He put together the MK Ultra program. And when John was at Harvard School of Medicine in the psychiatric department, Henry Murray was running the psychology department at Harvard, the clinical psychology department at Harvard at the same time. So John not only had, he had a lot of education by this whole, kind of CIA, MK Ultra control mindset. And yet, some of the stuff that I read that Henry Murray wrote, it was harrowing, some of the stuff he wrote about what he thought about humans. John was able to rise above all that. I mean, it's really quite remarkable that John was able to rise above all that.
Think he ever wrote about that, though, John. Did he ever write about the...
He never wrote about it. And I just, I stumbled on it by accident, because I was talking to a friend of mine who worked at Oberlin College, and John went to Oberlin College, and this...
Bud Hopkins went to Oberlin.
And Bud Hopkins was in the same class.
As John?
They were like a year apart, but they went to college together in Oberlin.
Oh, I loved Oberlin. I didn't go to school there, but I used to visit Oberlin.
Yeah, so both John Mack and Bud Hopkins were at Oberlin at the same time.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Bud Hopkins is the one that brought the ET experiencers to John Mack.
Yeah.
And on top of that, I found out that the president at the time, when John and Bud was at Harvard, the president of Oberlin at the time was a yearly participant at the Bohemian Grove.
Oh, really? Huh.
Yeah.
But where do you, so how do you put all these pieces
kind of like,
together?
How
do you put all these pieces together? How do you put them all together?
I put them all together and say that any person who's involved in this field that thinks that they've not been touched by some kind of a CIA or a mind control program or been handled is just totally naive. And that, you know, we're human, and this is part of the human world, and none of us are free of any of this. So,
what do you think, John and Bud were influenced by the CIA in their research?
I think they were influenced in the sense that they were, you know, given clients that probably they were sent people to examine that, mm-hmm. you know, John was kind of under Henry Murray's thumb.
I didn't know that.
So, I just think that, you know, it was a very, I think in the early years especially, I mean, it was a highly, highly controlled environment. And I think we're all now, just now, becoming aware of how very controlled it was. Mm-hmm. And things that we thought were, oh my golly, how did this happen? It's just amazing. Were, you know, really probably orchestrated a lot of it behind the scenes, because I think the government was trying to understand ET experiencers too. And, you know, probably John uh-huh. was picked as, and Bud Hopkins, maybe they were chosen because, you know, the president of Oberlin knew them. Who knows? I think there's an untold story there. Let's put it like that. There's an untold story.
I think that's very interesting. I had a very spiritual experience at Oberlin when I was like, running, I had this like awakening. I was on this marathon run when I was visiting a friend there. We went running, and then I had this like breakthrough there. So I don't
interesting.
Know. It is interesting.
And
but,
sometimes I'll just have conversations. I'm real friendly. Just have conversations with people. I mean, they'll just drop the most amazing information in my lap. I'm like, I would have never known it had I not. You know, had this conversation with a person from Oberlin.
Interesting. And it was the first co-ed college in the country as well, you know.
I'm sorry, the first what?
It was the first co-ed college in the country before Oberlin.
Right.
I mean,
and
so
you,
I
did you know Dick Farley that was part of the Rockefeller?
No,
group?
I don't.
Dick Farley, he was part of the Rockefeller Initiative. He was a reporter from he still does reporting, I think, out of Cape Cod or wherever. But yeah, he was like a Washington D.C. journalist, and he was part of the Rockefeller Initiative. Well, you know, come to find out, he grew up in the same neighborhood as Bud Hopkins.
In Kentucky, was it Kentucky? Where's Bud from?
No, it's in Ohio. A suburb of Cleveland or something in Ohio. Yeah.
Right.
But they grew up in the same neighborhood. They were boyhood friends. Go figure.
And I've just been rereading Bud's book, Intruders. And, you know, because I've been doing a lot of research on those
right.
early abductions. And that is, there's some great insights into that book.
It's fascinating. Yeah, I mean, I think that there's untold stories in ufology of connections between people. And, you know, like Steve Bassett worked for John Mack. That's how he got involved.
He did?
Yeah.
Oh, that's how John, I see. Well, they say in the UFO field there are a lot of strange coincidences, like, you know, just people with certain names that seem to be appearing as contactees.
I got involved with Edgar. I married a man named Perry Wright. I meet Sandy Wright in Washington, D.C. Do you know Sandy?
Oh, yeah. I have a picture, actually. I was just looking at it. Me, Sandy, and John Mack together, because she supported John Mack. I love Sandy Wright.
So Sandy lived in Washington, D.C. I moved to Washington, D.C. Sandy passes away. I mean, mm-hmm. it's just like... all these, the names and the people and just the interfaces. I mean, it's just, it's really quite remarkable.
It is strange. Yeah, I mean, it just shows there's these bigger connections going on that we don't
have an idea about, if we're just looking at the ground, we have to look at a bigger picture to see how it's all connecting. And that's what's exciting, I think. That's what's really exciting. So thank you, Rebecca, for all the time.
Oh, you're so welcome. I had a good time.
Yeah, it's nice talking
to
you.
It's been a great
time. You know, we have been around a while, and we have looked at lots of things. And there's, like we said, there's new people coming on the scene, and it's all great, the energy moving into this movement. And it does need to be brought together. I think connecting the dots, which is what it seems like you want to do, is really important for going to the next level of it all.
Oh, I think we have to. And, you know, you're like talking about the Rockefeller Initiative. I mean, that's kind of a, you know, sacred cow in ufology. Oh, you can't pick that apart. And, well, sure you can. I mean, information always helps all of us, you know, better to know what was going on behind the scenes than not know. So
exactly.
That's what history is all about. That's what experience is all about. There's always a story under the story under the story. And why not know it?
Right. No, this is, and you know, this is what I like about some of the people that do come to contact. I do like Linda Moulton Howe because she's analyzing what she's learned. And I think using her intelligence to keep pushing the envelope of that understanding. And I think that we all have to do that. We all have to keep, in a way, rewriting history to include bigger and bigger frameworks. So.
And, you know, the government is one framework. Intelligence is one framework. You know, military is one framework. ET experiences or experiencers are another framework. I mean, we all have to have respect for the information that we bring forward out of our frameworks. And,
right.
You know,
but
do
I
something
think
with it. Live,
dots,
live a life based on it.
Connecting the dots is what expands who we are. You know, we need to see the bigger picture. You know, it's like that star map that Betty Hill put together. Suddenly someone connected the dots, and we sort of had a location. Whether or not any of this turns out to be what we think it is, it's definitely something. And I think, you know, that's what we have to do.
Thank you, Betty. And thank you,
Kathleen. We might not know what it
for,
really
like,
is.
Bringing even more information out on that. I mean, it's just amazing.
Yeah, something's going on, that's for sure. You know, it's not nothing. So
no, it's not.
Well, let's stay in touch, Rebecca. Thanks so much.
Okay, and, Alan, I hope to see you soon.
How do we get people in touch with you and your website? And
It's just exoconsciousness.com.
Okay.
Just exoconsciousness.
And your book.
Rebecca
and
Hardcastle.
Your book,
it's on Amazon. Sure. They can contact me through my website, and hopefully the new website will be up, and you can come on your show and maybe have some of the people from the Institute with us, and maybe
definitely.
We can all talk about what we're doing and where we're coming from and be exciting.
Well, let's do that. Let's make some videos. I'll even come down to Washington to do some videos of that.
Okay.
And also, maybe I'll reach out to Carolyn Corey about her.
Please
her
do.
Film.
I mean, her movie is amazing. You're going to love it.
Okay. I'm going to call her.
It's really
actually.
The next step. Her movie is the next step.
Is she in California?
She does beautifully. She's in California now.
Okay, I'm going to call her and see what she's up to. Okay.
Do you have her number, or should I text it to you?
You can text it to me, but I think I do have it. But text it to me anyway. And I'm going to call her tonight, actually. Do you think that should be okay? I'll call her tonight.
Yeah, that's okay.
She's
it's
in
still
California.
Early. Okay, good. Thanks, Alan.
Thanks, Rebecca. Thanks for everything.
Have a nice evening.
To you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.